Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two of the First for today, October the 14th, 2022. I am Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort. We have two stories for you, as the name of the show implies. One is still a continuation of Phil Mickelson's BS from yesterday, a little bit different part of it, because it was quite a large amount of BS spewed from him. It had nothing to do with Alan Shipnick yesterday. And then we'll also talk about the sudden resurgence of Ricky Fowler. So we're going to start with actually Ricky Fowler and the Zozo Championship. Second round in the books in Japan last night. If you were watching the awful Thursday night football game, I fell asleep watching that. Congratulations to the Commanders, I guess, for somehow winning that. Sorry to Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit for having to call these garbage games every week. But nevertheless, we had the Zozo Championship on in Japan. At starting 11 p.m. Eastern time, 78-player, no-cut event, ball in hand for the second round. And that ball in hand was because of wet conditions on Thursday. They kept ball in hand for Friday so that if things were muddy or whatever, you clean the ball, all that good stuff. So that meant low scores were likely, and we got them. So if you look at the leaderboard, we've got two players at 10 under par through two rounds. One of those players is Ricky Fowler. The other player is Andrew Putnam, but Ricky Fowler. Where's that guy been? How about that? So Fowler played very well in his second round, went actually bogey-free, and he didn't even know that after the fact. Was asked after the round, you know, what's it kind of like to go bogey-free? He said he didn't even know that that had happened. And I think the interesting thing is Fowler doesn't believe he's played very well through two rounds. He shot 67 to open, 63 in the second round, obviously ball in hand. But he said he's not really striking the ball very well, and he was asked about some of the changes he's been making, going back to Butch Harmon, just trying to kind of get back to maybe where he, not exactly where he was, I think he still wants to invest in these long-term swing changes, but where he feels more comfortable with Butch Harmon, instead of, you know, some of those changes, kind of reversions, are paying off. And he says, the last 2 days, I wasn't exactly swinging it great. Like I said, I kind of did a good job of managing my way around. I'll get some work in tomorrow before the round and try to exaggerate a few things, where I'm a little bit tighter in lines and flights than I want. Like I said, I just did a good job of accepting what I had and kind of moving forward with that. Which, that last part is really pivotal, I think. And it's something that a lot of professional golfers deal with when they're going through change, when they're trying to do something substantially different. Not just little tweaks here and there, but having the belief that what you're doing is going to work, or at least it'll get you through what you need to get through today, or this round, or this hole. And I think there's a big difference for someone like Ricky Fowler of going through something and working with something you feel like has worked successfully in the past, i.e. Butch Harmon stuff, as opposed to what he'd been working on previously, where maybe he didn't have total buy-in, didn't have total confidence, because he didn't see the results to match up to that. But if you go and say, oh, well, I'm using the Butch stuff, I'm one of the players with the Butch stuff, I became a top 15, 20 player in the world with the Butch stuff, so it should work. I can believe in that. I can buy into that for one round at a time. And hopefully we get things worked out, as he said, for the Saturday round. And I think that's the key difference here in trying to go back to the familiar instead of moving forward with something new. But both are never the same. It's not like you're doing the exact same thing. We all evolve, of course, as golfers and especially professionals, even though you know what you're trying to accomplish and what the positions are and all those types of things. You're never exactly the same. And I think there's an acknowledgement of that. I don't think that's brand new news to anybody. But for Fowler, I think it is going back to something more familiar feeling is kind of interesting. And then he kind of talked about, you know, how he's tried to manage himself these first couple of rounds. Obviously said he didn't know it was bogey-free. What he said that he felt like he did a good job of, maybe not swinging the ball, or swinging as well at the ball, but he said he did a good job, quote, I did a good job of kind of just focusing, staying kind of present, trying to keep moving forward. It's always nice to have a clean card. I think that the biggest difference from yesterday to today, obviously not as much moisture, we had a nice dry today, day date, but on top of that for me, just kind of cleaning up the card and managing my way around really nicely today. And I think that is something that an aggressive player like Fowler, and I'm an aggressive player, obviously not on that, nowhere near that stratosphere skill. But for players who are aggressive, who are trying to make birdies and eagles, and you have to, right, on the PGA Tour, you can't just get away with pars, but who are especially aggressive to even more difficult pins, who don't necessarily just bide their time and wait for chances, The difficulty is when you have rounds where you get overly aggressive and the performance doesn't match that aggression. That's where you get into trouble. That's where you have difficulty scoring. But when those two things line up, it's a beautiful thing. You score extremely well. For Fowler, he's saying he's not swinging as well, but if he can manage his game around the golf course and wait for those opportunities, that's kind of what he's talking about. Wait for those opportunities to score and then execute. You're doing yourself a great service because you're not going to have typically four great rounds in a tournament. Two or three probably if you're going to win. And if you have two or three good ones, you've got to manage the bad one or the relatively bad one so that you still score well. So in these conditions, with lift clean in place, with ball in hand, to be able to score that well, not feeling particularly great about the technical side of it, I think is a good thing for him. Does that necessarily portend well for the weekend if he doesn't think he's swinging it that well? I don't know. And he could figure it out tomorrow morning on the range or tomorrow afternoon, whenever he gets to the range, and feel ready to go, shoot another 63, shoot a 65 on Sunday and win this thing, and it'll be a huge story for golf. But at least he seems like he's moving in the right direction. The other guy I wanted to highlight, actually, on the Zozo Championship leaderboard side of things, is Kita Nakajima. And he didn't do an interview on Friday, at least in English, unfortunately. But Nakajima is now a professional. You may remember him from a previous Masters where he was in the top. I don't even know if he finished in the top 10, but he was in the top 10 at one point. Was once the world number one amateur at the top of the world amateur golf ranking. He shot 63 as well as Fowler on Friday. So he is solo fifth, three out of the lead of the joint leaders of Putnam and Fowler. Two guys between him and the lead. And he's in his, third or fourth professional start. So he is a young player who is almost certainly going to be a guy that gets over to the PGA Tour at some point, unless he kind of decides he wants to prefers to play in Japan. But I don't think that's his aspiration. I think his aspiration is someday to be world number one. And not to say that he's going to win this golf tournament, because I definitely didn't see that. But I saw a top 20 or a top 10 possible for him in this tournament, given that he's a great player, given that he's on home soil, and given, frankly, maybe some tempered expectations because of the depth of competition that he's playing against on the PGA Tour. Well, here he is, shot 63. Now, it's hard to follow up a deep one with another deep one, and we'll talk about for all the guys at the top of the leaderboard. If you look at the top five players on the leaderboard, what they shot on Friday, 62, 63, 65 for Keegan Bradley, 61 for John Ha, went out 28, came back in 33, almost had himself a sub-60 round, but then Nakajima rounds that out with 63. So you had five guys who went really low to get themselves established at the top of the leaderboard. It's hard to imagine all of them going low again tomorrow. So that'll be the intrigue of the tournament. We'll see what happens there. Obviously, still a lot of drama involved. You've got guys that are top players in the world lingering just behind them. You've got Colin Morikawa, who shot 64. He is five back of the lead. You've got Victor Hovland, shot 66. He is five back of the lead. You've got Xander Schauffele, who is six back of the lead, former champion of this event. So you've still got some really world-class players who could do the same thing as what happened with these top five players on Friday. Still a lot of action to move. Should be an interesting finish. Unfortunately, there just aren't going to be a ton of people paying attention to this tournament. It's going to be a good one, but there aren't going to be a ton of people paying attention to it just because of the time change here in the United States. It's really hard to watch, I understand. But again, for you people who are on the West Coast of the United States, you're getting this stuff in prime time. Please enjoy it. It's good stuff. All right. So we talked about the PGA Tour event. We have Valderrama on the DP World Tour, which is kind of interesting, but that's kind of in action second round as we're recording this. So won't get too much into that. And LIV Golf, I think, is close to wrapping up on their tournament in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in the King Abdullah Economic City, if you care about that. But I think the thing that we really need to follow up on here is some of Phil Mickelson's bullshit from yesterday. Now, we talked about it as it relates to his comments around Alan Shipnuck and what he described as not having a quote-unquote interview, what interview means, off the record, all of that stuff. We talked about all of that. But I think there's a more dangerous / psychotic component to this. There's a piece of this that is, frankly, quite disturbing. And I don't know to the extent that it's disturbing, because I don't know if it's spin or if it's this kind of delusional self-belief or what it is. But let me kind of get into it with you, because after Mickelson talks about everything with Alan Shipnuck, and that's a very brief piece of it. I mean, it's really one sentence of this whole press conference. But then he starts talking about where he is in his decision-making, and it feels like, again, he is trying to take a victory lap, and that's classic Phil, right? I mean, Phil loves to tell you when he's right or when he thinks he's right, and he's done that for 30 years. But the delusion around some of what he is saying here is frankly kind of stunning. And part of it is interesting because Phil, it's classic Phil. So Phil's talking about trying to justify Liv as a disruptor to golf in the context kind of what he said to Alan Shipnuck about trying to change the business model of the PGA Tour. And then he pulls out cricket and he's talking about cricket. Phil doesn't know anything about cricket. I assure you he knows nothing about cricket. But he tries to bring it up as kind of an example because he probably heard someone at Liv, probably Norman or someone else, talking about cricket and the evolution of it from test cricket, which is kind of really long form, multi-day matches, to the modern era of kind of like T20 and shorter formats. And I'm not trying to speak like an expert here. I've watched like 10 hours of cricket in my life, but at least done some research to understand what the hell I'm kind of talking about, at least for 30 seconds of conversation. So you've had this kind of big change in kind of a World Cricket League and test cricket and T20 cricket and all this stuff. But Phil's trying to talk about it as though he fully understands it. And this is just something he really likes to do. And okay, that's one part of it. But then here comes the bigger kind of delusion here. And he's trying to say that Liv is winning, I think, and that he made the right decision to go to Liv. And so some of his comments just don't really make a whole lot of sense. So I'll give you some of them direct so that you can interpret it for yourself. But he says, I think if you look back in the 70s, what happened with cricket is probably the best analogy. I think that, as I said earlier, a long, long time ago, for my 30 years on the PGA Tour, pretty much all the best players played on the PGA Tour, at least for the last 20 years. That will never be the case again. It's almost certainly not true. I think going forward, you have to pick a side. You have to pick which side or what side do you think is going to be successful. Okay, so now he's kind of throwing a line in the sand. So instead of saying we all should be one cohesive community, he is saying the exact opposite on the other side of his mouth. Well, we want world ranking points. We want everything to come together, but you also have to pick a side and you should be on our side. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense, to be honest with you. But that's, again, the speaking out of both sides of your mouth thing is something a lot of Liv folks have adopted and tried to do. And he then follows up that statement by saying, and I firmly believe that I'm on the winning side of how things are going to evolve and shape in the coming years for professional golf. And I see Liv Golf trending upwards. I see the PGA Tour trending downwards. And I love the side that I'm on. And I love how I feel. I love how I'm reinvigorated and excited to play golf and compete. I love the experience. I love the way they treat us. I love the way they involve us and listen to us in decision. I mean, it's so inclusive. It's so fluid, the things Liv Golf is leading. Whether it's shorts, whether it's other aspects of professional golf that are going to change and evolve, those positions will be led by Liv. And I mean, no, that's not, I mean, shorts is not an innovation, okay? Let's stop right there. Shorts is not an innovation. But it is interesting for him to just declare baselessly that Liv is on the upswing and the PGA Tour is on the downswing when the PGA Tour has massive television contracts and Liv is reportedly going to pay to be on TV in the United States. When you have basically the foundation of popular golfers on the PGA Tour, and you have a less foundation on Liv. When you have on the PGA Tour, frankly, a stunning amount of money and attention and audience, and an interesting spot for professional golf at large, whether you had the Liv guys or not, and Liv is out there just kind of trying to figure it out. Now, can that dynamic change? Yeah, it can change. But right now, I think that's delusional to say what he said. Then the delusion goes even deeper, which this is the real dangerous part of it to me, or the real staggering part of it, I suppose, because Phil tries to go geopolitical here. And that is really not Phil's forte. It's definitely not Phil's forte. So he's asked if there, he was surprised at all that there were some setbacks in the early stages of the development of Liv and being able to pull it off and all that stuff. And he says he's not surprised they pull it off. But then he kind of goes and talks about how great it is to have the Saudis involved in golf. And he says, I believe in the passion. Look, the game of golf is very lucky to have the PIF, the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, invest in the game. Okay. The sport of the game of golf is being influxed with billions of dollars now. It was before, by the way. And the ability to go global and make golf a truly global sport is really beneficial for the game. Again, we had this infrastructure before. We had the Asian Tour. We had the DP World Tour. They had an alliance. The PGA Tour and DP World Tour had their strategic alliance, all that stuff. You have the PGA Tour of Australasia. All these things exist together. What Phil's saying is that he can go global. He and Liv can go global. He's not talking about golf in full. And that's never part of the conversation. Now, here's the paragraph that will probably put your jaw to the floor. At least it did to me because of just how asinine it is and how untrue it is, just on its face. Now, the United States and the UK are not favorable to this, but everywhere outside of the world, Liv Golf is loved. And eventually, they'll come around and they will be accepting of it. But everywhere else in the world, the ability to move these tournaments throughout the world, and I've spoke with people that have had dealings that have not been positive with the tour and have had nothing but positive experience with Liv. It opens up opportunities to move professional golf throughout the world in other countries and grow the game internationally. Now again, outside of a few countries, the United States and the UK, where it's very negatively viewed currently, that has been changing and evolving already, and in time, in a few years, it will be not only accepted but appreciated, the involvement and the influx of capital into the sport and what it's doing. All of that is patently untrue. I mean, just patently untrue. And it's really interesting to hear Phil spew propaganda that is inaccurate. I mean, not just inaccurate. It goes beyond inaccuracy. It goes to bold-faced lie. And to say that, and then to not expect to get called out for it, and that's probably what he expects. I could just say whatever I want. No one's paying attention anyway. But to be able to say that with a straight face is pretty staggering. And I think that these guys are clearly getting fed bad information, or they just don't care and they're just going to lie through it, kind of tweet through it, so to speak. It is pretty staggering to say that, because if you look at the kind of world numbers, the opinions of countries about Saudi Arabia and their investment, and then kind of try to derive some opinions about Liv related to that, there's not 100% correlation, of course. And I think you could find some intriguing differences in philosophy between people who you might agree with politically and disagree with on Liv, or vice versa. But none of that is true. None of that is true. I mean, the United States is generally opposed to Saudi Arabia. So is the United Kingdom. So is Canada. So is a lot of Europe. So is a good chunk of the rest of the world, by the way. But there are pockets, obviously, where Saudi Arabia can be viewed as an actor in a broader world of not great actors. And I think there's been some suggestion about that, like for Anirban Lahiri, for example, where he goes, well, you know, people in India don't really view the Saudis negatively. They view them as just another potential partner, and it's all just kind of a geopolitical game, more or less, is what he implies. And maybe you could feel that way in China. Maybe you could certainly feel that way in Russia. Maybe if you're in an OPEC plus country, you know, something like that. I guess. But generally speaking, I think Phil's trying to minimize the idea that there is a massive kind of base that is going to be anti-Liv because the Saudis are involved, or anti-Liv just period. But this notion that it's so great to have billions of dollars come in from the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia to benefit specifically 48 people is just, it's stupid. It is absolutely stupid, and it needed to be called out. And I want to appreciate that, not only for this show, but also for the folks at the Fried Egg. Did a really good job with that. I think Brendan Porath talked about it in their newsletter today. I mean, we would love for you to subscribe to our newsletter, The Break. It's on golfnewsnet.com. You can subscribe there. It comes out twice a week. But great stuff from Porath in that explaining the absurdity of what Phil said, and that that was a way bigger deal in the broader scheme of things than what he said about Alan Shipnick. And I wanted to address that as well. I wanted to kind of get in yesterday what he said about Shipnick, because that kind of weighs into my job. My is a little bit selfish, weighs into my life a little bit. But the bigger spew of BS about geopolitics and everyone's just going to come to accept it and everything's fine, when all of the evidence tells you to the contrary, that they're probably not going to be readily accepted, that the interest in these tournaments beyond maybe the initial four or five, at least so far, again, all of this is subject to change, but at least so far has waned dramatically since the opening three or four tournaments, maybe five, three or four, whatever that number is. But after the initial curiosity and seemingly having a moment with Dustin Johnson winning that playoff in, Illinois, then it just, not so great. So all the evidence suggests what Phil's saying is at best inaccurate, at most a lie, and I guess at worst, total propaganda. And it's just very strange. I don't understand that tact. I don't understand why Liv isn't trying to come at this as an underdog that is trying to, and it'd be very hard to frame the billions of dollars the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia has as underdog, but trying to come at this as, we've got a great idea, we've got a great backer in their view, as Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, we're here to change golf, we're a challenger, and we're just going to do it on our own, instead of this whole, all of this stuff that's just provably false, patently untrue, or some mixture of both. It does not behoove them to do things this way. And I don't understand the insistence upon it, other than ego and pride getting in the way. And at a certain point, you have to come at this a little bit more humbly than they have. And maybe even a whole lot more humbly than they have. Because the approach of bravado and lying and not trying to bully, I think bully's thrown around too much, but trying to push around the golf establishment by kind of prodding them into an argument, it's so off-putting. It really is off-putting. The whole thing is off-putting. And I think as a golf fan, whether you care about Liv, whether you like Liv, whether you think it's the stupidest thing you've ever heard in your life, whatever your spectrum of opinion is, you're probably tired of all this crap. And the sad part is, it's just going to go on for a while until either the Liv concept exhausts or someone gives in. And I don't see the giving in happening anytime soon, so you have to wait for Liv to go away if you want this to kind of end. Or at some point, maybe somewhere in the middle, the people who play Liv just kind of accept they are on their own island and that's where they are. And the golf ecosystem just continues as it is, and they just operate as separate fiefdoms, and we go on from there. That's probably the best possible scenario at this point. But all of this BS from the Liv side, and then that's awful. And then you have kind of petty stuff coming back the other way. I think the best thing that the golf establishment could do at this point is to just say, we're not acknowledging you, and you can just get over that. Or you can keep complaining and no one's going to listen anymore. But we are, and I hate to use Big J's mission accomplished speech, moving on. And that this is what the world is now, and then we will reassess it when the world changes. That is probably where I would like to see this go. Because, yes, it's great. This creates content fodder, and I understand that. But the reason I kind of talk about this stuff is because I think it's important to talk about it. Not because I necessarily love talking about it. I would love to just getting back to the usual machinations and inside baseball, the PGA Tour, or the DP World Tour, the LPGA Tour, stuff that's just kind of on its surface, maybe boring, but great for golf geeks. But this is kind of getting to the stuff that's just kind of ridiculous. And it has to be acknowledged, but I kind of wish it didn't have to be. All right, that's going to do it for us today on 2 Off the First. Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show. You can watch us on our YouTube channel, golfnewsnet.com. Obviously, listen to us through your favorite podcasting service. Drop us a line to our view. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballinger. You can find Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. We will see you tomorrow. Have a great weekend, everybody.